Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, guys. Just a warning. This episode comes with a trigger warning. We're going to be discussing quite deep things with regards to mental health, trauma, self-harm, and prevention with regards to the book A Little Life. So if you are sensitive to those topics, we will put the particular time markers in the description. But yeah, run with us.
I feel like I'm going to cry.
Talk to you soon.
I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Welcome back to another episode of
No Sleeping.
Hello guys, and welcome back to another episode of Mostly Lit.
Welcome back, welcome forward. How is everybody?
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah?
I'm good. I'm not doing too badly. I'm just kind of getting on with life, doing what I have to do, sipping my green tea and my black coffee.
Yes, right.
That should be my mixtape.
Oh, green tea, black coffee.
Green tea and black coffee.
I like that.
They're on two different sides, but they are both caffeine. And it's helpful.
You're mad. Oh man. Mm. You know what, right? So I've just come back from holiday. Mm-hmm. I'd be up in Bali. I've had 6 weeks of joblessness.
You were living your life, mate.
So living my best.
All them shots. I'm honestly living with the Win Collective.
Fam, we've got more coming, yeah? We've got more coming. Because you know, I'm out here trying to start my Instagram journey. You've seen my captions.
I'm certain.
I'm trying to do up influencer.
I'm dead.
Because I'm sorry, I'd be actually selling books. I'd be literally, I'm out here just telling people to buy books and they buy them. And I'm like, but where is my coin? Like, I don't understand. So, yeah.
The positioning is so jokes.
Positioning. But yeah, man, like, I've had a great time. But I've come back, like, one, I'm still jet lagged. It's two days and I'm, like, still jet lagged. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. Mm-hmm. It hits, like, 4 p.m. and I'm ready to sleep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, it's been 3-4 days and I'm still jet lagged. I don't understand. But I've come back to weather that is despicable, Alex. Mm. Why am I wearing my winter coat from 2 years ago? Because I haven't bought my new winter coat for this year. In October.
That's good though.
No.
See, I have to take out my winter coat.
October.
But it's cold. It should be cold.
No, it should be cold in like, I don't know, late November.
Late.
Right now, it should be like, you know that four type American.
I don't agree with that.
Like, I should be going out with my Mac and my parka.
Okay, okay.
Not I with see. Winter coat.
I hear you.
I should be going out with a little light jumper.
I hear you.
You know,
on
a little light scarf here and there.
I don't know. I find
it's cold.
I don't know. I find it quite therapeutic to just have a bit of fresh air, a bit of thin air. You know what I mean?
Thin air. Nah,
that's
don't.
What, that's what
for
it,
me,
that's
it's
what
not it.
That's what it is. That's
but also,
is.
I'm worried because obviously SAD. I'm really preparing.
Just get your vitamin D spray. Get your magnesium cream. I have.
Yeah, magnesium cream.
Yeah.
What does that do?
So basically, because you know, when you're deficient for magnesium, it really affects your mood and
I
stuff
see.
As well.
Uh-huh.
So I rub that in. It's still like it's just lotion, but it has magnesium. magnesium in it.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I just rub it in. Yeah.
I want my vitamin D tablets. The blue light is out. I've been looking up weighted blankets. I hear they're really good.
I want one. They're expensive. Yeah, but I want one.
But I really think I want one.
Yeah.
And then a light box, just getting everything sorted so that it hits December. Mm-hmm. I'm not spun. Mm-hmm. I'm still out here trying to
do your thing.
Trying to do life rather than life doing me.
Oh, man.
Because that's not it. But yeah, life has been good. Has life been good for you?
Yes, I went to see Snow Allegra. My babes.
Who's Snow Allegra?
What do you mean?
I don't know who this is.
Anyway, I went to see... she's an R&B singer.
Right.
She's an amazing singer. Okay. So I went to see her with Eden, a friend from Dat's Pod.
Hey, Eden.
And guess who else was there? Oh, Samia. Samia Jan, the poet, was there.
Samia! I know her!
Yeah, she was there as well. So we were just enjoying it. Like, we just had a good time.
Yeah.
It was really nice. R&B. Like,
was it one of those, like, you know that party for your birthday that you took me to, those slow, like...
No,
is
it wasn't.
80s, no, 80s.
She's a singer.
Guys. I think you've heard of this story before, but Alex really, for his 26th birthday?
26th birthday, yeah.
He took us to a... what is it? Is it an 80s?
It's called Got Soul, right? And basically, they have downstairs... Downstairs, they have 90s and early noughties music. And upstairs, they sometimes have the, like, 80s stuff. But Ray just wasn't there. Ray just wasn't there mentally. No. She wasn't there spiritually. No. She wasn't at the stage she's at now.
No.
So she's just not really aligned.
Do you think if I went now, I would enjoy it?
I think that growth has happened. And I need to kind of like help that process by giving you playlists to listen to.
I actually do think you should give me playlists to listen
to. Can actually sit there and actually listen to it with people around you, because I know that you're not going to listen to it by yourself.
No.
I can't trust you on that. But you're going to basically think. But basically, yeah, Ray wasn't really feeling Erykah Badu. She wasn't feeling that.
No,
but,
me and my friends, we both got our Ubers quick.
But also that day, like, I feel like everybody was, I feel like you guys were tired as well that day. I do remember, because you got to learn.
Yeah, we know we were like that because of
okay, so basically we had drinks before in Shoreditch in the Ace Hotel and stuff, and I was just waved. So, but I was kind of like still sensing everybody was a bit like in places, because it had been a very, very long year for some reason that year. 2017.
Was it 2017?
Yeah, so
the good days.
The good days. But anyway, but yeah, so Got Soul is really good. But Snow Allegra, she's just like a new wave R&B.
Is she one of the light skinned whisper singers?
She's not even light skinned. Like, she's Algerian.
Really?
Like, is she Algerian?
Hashtag alternative.
She's Arab, huh?
Is she like alternative?
No,
she's
I don't think she makes Georgia. I don't think she makes any like excuses for the fact that she is like conventionally attractive. Like, she's just a singer. She's beautiful. She's a singer.
Yeah.
She's from Sweden.
Yeah.
And I think she's, hold on, let me just double check where she's from, like her background, because I don't want to get that wrong.
Is she a woman of color, or is she just, you know?
I think that she would come under BAME. But she's passing, you know what I'm saying? So, like, she doesn't...
So she's white passing, yeah.
Yeah, so look, so she...
Oh, she's Peng!
Yeah, but she's like, you know what I mean? But she's...
Why is her name Snow Allegra?
Her actual name is like, was it Sherry Norosi?
Sherry,
that's her name. Sherry Norosi.
I never heard Persian. Of this woman in my life.
She's Persian. Okay, sorry,
so she's
not Algerian, sorry. Yes. But she's Persian, so...
We said Algerian, I was like, what?
Yeah, she's not. But, you know what I mean? Like, but she grew up in Sweden.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? So she is like, she's passing, so she is acceptable passing, to be looked at. But she's a really good singer. Like, she's a really, really good singer. And she's very emotive with her songs. She's amazing. She's an amazing new album called Ugh, Those Feels Again. And she has an album before that called Feels. So... Yeah,
feels and those feels again.
Yeah, so
that sounds interesting.
It sounds really good. Like, I think you'd enjoy it.
Really?
Like, because I know that you like writing, and you know, like, you like words.
I like words more.
Intentional.
Yeah.
Like, with regards to, and I think you
I always listen when I first listen to a song. I always have to listen to the lyrics.
She has a song called Situationship.
I don't want to listen to that shit. Jeez, Alex just went. She has a song called Situations. I was like,
she has a song called Toronto. She has a song called Love Like That. She's amazing. Like, I think she's really good. I think you'd enjoy her. But I think you'd in, I would say listen to her first album and then transition into the second one.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, it's always the earlier albums you can hear the real thing.
Yeah.
And then the second one's a bit more refined or whatever. But it's really good. Great performer. And I connected more with the album because I'd seen her.
So once
you know, when you see someone, you're like, right, I get it. Yeah. You know, when we see Daniel Caesar, I was like, okay, so I get you as a singer now. Yeah. When I saw her, I was like, I get you as a singer now. Yeah. So you bite into that.
Have you listened to the new Daniel Caesar?
No. I did the parts of it.
It's rubbish.
Oh, man.
And I'm so annoyed because, like, Freudian was, like, and when I saw him at Essence, it just was a lot. Mm. It was amazing. Yeah. And obviously, he told Black people to cancel him. His new album dropped and it was minging, so... It was kind of like, I mean, it wasn't minging, but there were some songs that I'm like, oh, nice. Mm. There was a song that he has with Brandy that I really liked.
Yeah, that's a good song.
But I just didn't feel it like I did with Freudian. Like, every song in Freudian is a banger for me, and it feels so emotive. Mm. There's a deep sense of emotion in it. There's just something really much deeper. And this one is more like, oh, I'm running off the clout. Mm. Like, people listen to my music, let's just make music. Mm-hmm. That's how it feels mm-hmm. like. But it's not Allegra.
I like her. I love her.
Okay, I'll listen.
Yeah, I fell in love that day.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
With who?
Snare, Allegra.
Oh, you fell in love with her?
Yeah, that day I was like, please just sing.
Is she like an Adele? Does she stay in one spot? Is she giving us choreography?
She's giving us movement across the stage, up and down.
Oh, like, costume changes. Adele or Janae.
No. She's actually out here doing
but not choreography.
Scenarios as well, based on.
Oh, so she's like a Solange.
Okay.
Yeah, because Solange is not doing big boop, boop, boop. She's just shaking her hair and giving us. Okay. This girl's lining up on the straight line
and getting in the face of white men
to be like, this black.
No, but like, it was really good. And it was a mixed crowd as well. It was really interesting to see. Yeah, that's what I had been up to. What else have I done? Hey guys, check me out on the Sarah Brett Show on Radio 5 Live once every month and stuff.
Ooh.
I just like go there and give her suggestions about books to read on the commute. It's only for half an hour. It's at midnight. So therefore, just get it on BBC Sounds and shit. Like, you know what I mean? Because no one's listening to that live.
Yeah.
Unless you're my mother.
Oh.
Who's like messaging me as we're doing it. And then sending it into the family group and then telling them the books that I suggested.
Oh, that is so sweet, auntie.
Yeah.
Oh. I haven't really done much. I've been on holiday.
Yeah, that's really good. That's good. I want to go on holiday.
My God, come to Zurich with me.
Sounds
for a day.
Okay. All right, give me the info after the show.
I will.
All right. So, what are you reading?
What am I reading? So, just before this, just maybe under 2 weeks ago, I finished the book that we're going to be discussing today, A Little Life, and I had been reading that for around 6 weeks, maybe near 2 months.
The ghetto.
And yeah, we'll talk about that later because I was heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And from that book, I just can't read anything with gravitas or with any like deep shit. So not to say that YA fiction is not deep, but it's lighter than, you know, I guess adult literary fiction. So currently I'm reading, I've previously talked about it, but I picked it up again because I let it go for a bit. Kingdom of Souls by Irina Baran.
I put that somewhere.
Yeah, we received an advanced copy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like around 70, 80 pages in, and it's really interesting. What I do love about YA fantasy is, one, I never thought I'd really enjoy YA fantasy because, you know, I was such a snobby cow. But I really enjoy it. I think what I do love about Rina is that she has tried very hard to build a world, because sometimes YA fantasy really focuses on personal relationships rather than world building, which for me brings it a bit down, which like books like Philip Pullman's his Dark Materials trilogy, J.K. Rowling's and like J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter series, Patrick Ness, then that Knife of Never Letting Go and like Chaos Walking series, what they were so good for me was the world building and the fact that you're not just learning about characters, you're really learning about the world. And what I've seen from Rina in this book is she's trying very hard to build that world along character development and character building, which I think is very commendable. Sometimes it can be a bit too much because she's throwing in words that I'm like, what the hell does this mean? And I think I guess she just needs to be a little bit careful with how she does it, because I'd appreciate if I got a word and then further on down the line that word is explained somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite hard to do in a chebe where you're just throwing in random language and you have no idea what he's saying, mm-hmm. but you feel it because it's so culturally rich. But with YA, with fantasy, I think you have to take time to explain.
Mm.
Whereas like with like literary, real fiction, well, realism, it's kind of okay, you get away with it. And what's great about this is that, I mean, I when I was going on holiday, I was kind of like, I need a book to read that is very lighthearted, but also fun and moving and fast paced. And this was a book that came up at the top of the list for most people. It's been optioned for film.
Mm.
And Michael B. Jordan is going to be producing it.
Okay.
So that was quite interesting. Fresh off, you know, Black Panther.
Yeah, he's got his production company as well, and he was looking for things to produce and create. Yeah.
And I think this will be really good. I think YA fantasy is really like hitting off right now. Daughters of Anri by Reni Kayamaya has just been published.
Yeah, looking good.
Yeah, you know, the cover for that is beautiful.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's so nice. I always think like, what I love when fantasy I think is like the gate to like when you've had representation and you've spoken about the real life, you can now begin to see yourself in your imagination. And I think the great thing about fantasy is the idea of seeing yourself not in real world, like seeing yourself in your imagination rather than just focus on your own immediate reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really great for young kids because then they can start to actually see themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's what I'm reading.
That sounds good.
Yeah, Kingdom of Souls by Rena Baron. Mm-hmm. What are you reading?
Before I go into what I'm reading, and also it's Black History Month, so I figured I may as well just shout out like a black writer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a book by a writer called OK. I want to say his full name, so I'm going to just like OK Chukwuzelu. And he's got this book called The Private Joys of Nena Maloney that came out on the 3rd of October with Dialogue Books. And OK was a contributor to Safe as well, that came out last year. And was it last year or was it this year? Did it come out this year? Yeah, it came out this year. But yeah, so he's got this new book called The Private Joys of Nena Maloney. And it's a comic novel about Nena, a half Nigerian teenager living with her beloved mother, Joni. As Nena approaches womanhood, she longs to connect with her Igbo Nigerian culture. Her once close and tender relationship with her mother becomes strained as Nena begins to ask probing questions about her estranged father, who her mother refuses to discuss. So
this.
It comes out because it's like a very interesting Nollywood drama.
Yeah.
Nena is asking big questions of how to be when she doesn't know the whole of who she is. Meanwhile, Joni just wonders how to love when she has never truly been loved. Their lives are filled with a cast of characters asking similar questions about identity and belonging whilst grappling with the often hilarious encounters of everyday Manchester. The reason why I love this, I'm going to grab a copy, is because it's not set in London, number one. We don't need that.
Where's it saying?
Manchester. We just said everyday Manchester was the last thing we just said. But yeah, it's set in Manchester.
That's how you know it doesn't click in my head.
This is what I mean. Like, so set in Manchester. And I like the fact that things are kind of moving away from being
London-centric
and put into directly kept here, because there are other cities and there are other black communities in the country. So we've got Bristol, we've got Birmingham, we've got Manchester, we've got many cities in the Midlands, we've even got like parts of Scotland.
Ireland, there's quite a massive black community in Ireland.
And it's like, I want to see more stories from those places. I want to hear more voices coming out from those places, because if we're going to really sit by this annoying title of Black British, then
we need to
actually be Black British,
not Black London, yeah,
let alone Black England, you know what I mean. We need to really be embracing all of this stuff.
Can't lie, yes, I love being in London.
London will kill you, but at the end of the day,
yeah, it will kill you.
But then, so we move and Manchester, that's what I like to see. So sweet. Shout out to OK,
congratulations,
and you know, he's really tackling questions on race, gender, class, family, redemption, and all of that. So shout out to you. Also shout out to Ashley Hickson Lovins. The 392 has been optioned for TV.
Yeah,
so that's fantastic. on his behalf, and amazing to own it, London.
Yeah.
Crystal Mahay Morgan, fantastic. So just shout out to everything, and it's amazing. Like,
this is amazing.
Daughters of Nui, like, yeah, they launched the other day.
Yeah.
Slider Cuts, from Nights Off.
We went to that launch. Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah. So shout out to them, working hard as ever to kind of bring diverse books to kids and young people.
Yeah.
And, you know, just general community building and everything that they've done so far. It's just been amazing. So shout out to Amy, David, Marseille, and Isha. So everybody is doing amazingly over there. You guys are doing amazingly.
I'm so proud of you guys.
So fantastic. It's been great to see. I love to see it. Content I like. What I'm reading this book called Tuesdays with Maury.
Is it nonfiction?
In it.
Yeah, of course it is.
Thing is, right, he's a fiction writer. It's just like the one nonfiction book.
Pick it up.
But like, obviously, I've read the rest of his books. I've spoken about the five people we meet in heaven. I've spoken about all of that stuff. And but he's got this book where he has a conversation with his old university lecturer called Maury. Because Mitch Albom, he's a journalist, and then he went into fiction writing, and he has a column on all this stuff. But it kind of talks about his early career from when he left uni, and then he reconnected with his university professor, and then his university professor was diagnosed with ALS. So that nerve, like his nerves were shutting down from the legs up.
Crazy.
So progressively over years, he had become like less and less.
Yeah.
But his character still kind of stayed the same. Yeah. And it was these kind of conversations. So every Tuesday, he went to meet up with Maury and just talk to him about life and about things, about like feeling sorry for yourself and, you know, loving others. And like he had an appreciation day. So he invited, because obviously he knows he's going to die. That's one barrier you got to cross. He knows he's going to die. Now, he invited all the people that he loved to come and like tell them how much he loved them, and for them to tell him how much they love him, rather than it being at the funeral when he is, you know, not there. You know what I mean? So he's like, yeah, let's do it now. And then like on all this stuff. And it's really amazing. Really, really, really great conversations going through here. It's really, you know, when you've got young people speaking to older people about life, it's such wisdom that comes from the older people, because they have seen a lot, but they can still learn from everybody and everything. Mm-hmm. And it was really good. It's really good, beautiful writing. Mitch Albom's my favorite person. I love it. So that's
an
what I'm reading.
Old man, a young man, and life's greatest lesson.
Yeah, what to do before death. I'm also listening to It's Not Okay to Feel Blue and Other Lies, the essay collection created by Scarlett Curtis, mm-hmm, and featuring a whole host of people.
Yeah.
I'm listening to that. I just really started it. The essays on mental health,
mm-hmm,
and people's experiences of mental health.
Yeah.
I like it in places. I do think that with big names, I'm a bit particular when it comes to their stories, because mm-hmm, I feel like some of it is still a bit curated.
Yeah.
But I like the smaller names and the people that I have, like, probably stories that I put a bit closer to my experiences.
Yeah.
And their vulnerability is just commendable throughout the whole book anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is what I'm reading.
Sweet. All your nonfiction stuff.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, so the book that we are discussing today, since you don't have raised culture questions for me.
No, you do not.
Basically, guys, I've won. Like, I am very cultured and I understand stuff. Even though I just asked you, who's Snow Allegra?
Also, I want to shout out to JJ for...
JJ!
Because obviously we haven't spoken since the live show that happened at London Podcast Festival.
Yes.
And like, amazingly, you guys did amazingly. Listening back to the episode was so funny.
Yeah.
Editing it was so jokes. I was like, oh my God. But shout out to JJ and his book, Mask Off.
You spoke to him as well?
Yeah. To him on What Matters. And just say, fantastic. Like, thank you so much for stepping in.
Yeah.
As host, when I was just like whisked off to the Midlands. Yeah. My nan's fine. Everything's good. So, yeah, like, I just want to say thank you to that. And it's amazing to think that have like a creative community that can support those things when those things happen. And he just took it in his stride.
He was phenomenal.
It sounded so great. And you guys said I was handsome.
Whatever. Don't let it get to your head. They don't like you.
You know, yeah, just beautiful black people sitting on stage. It's just amazing. So, thank you so much to that. And shout out to your book as well.
Yeah, looking forward to more and many more projects from you.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to discuss A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. And I want you all to brace yourselves. I did put a trigger warning at the top of the show. So if you guys have not read it, / want to read it, / are reading it, / have been through bare shit in life, and then want to hear what we're going to talk about, obviously feel free to just pause, fast forward, stop.
One, I would say, I don't know if you want to really listen to this episode. Yeah. I mean, as much as we want you to listen, because, you know, you to listen.
Do what you got to do. I'm not going to be offended.
If we get like 50 people playing, in like a few weeks' time, we get more listeners having, just, like, you guys read it.
Yeah, just take your time, please.
Yeah.
But yes, so A Little Life. Don't take it away, Ray.
Right, so.
Take it away, Ray.
Take it away, Ray.
Take it away,
Okay, so A Little Life is a book by Hanya Yanagihara. It was, I believe, published in 2015. It was nominated and I think shortlisted for the Man Booker in that year as well. Something about seven killings, one.
Oh, the brief history of seven killings.
That's the one. Marlon James's book.
A brief history of seven killings.
I was like, what's that book called again? And I haven't read it, but can't even lie to you, I probably shouldn't have one, because this book should have one, in my opinion. And briefly, the book tells the story of technically one guy and his three other friends, but I would say four people are like very prominent in it, and one is the most prominent. We have a young man called Jude, who we don't really know his exact age because he doesn't know. We don't know his ethnicity because he doesn't know. And another young man called Willem, and two other young men, JB and Jean-Baptiste, JB and Malcolm. And they all meet in college, each studying various different things. JB is an artist. Willem is an actor. Malcolm is an architect. And Jude becomes a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And like a, you know, big corporate lawyer.
Corporate lawyer, yeah.
So I was like, boop, boop. Waste your life, honey. And the story, essentially, it's called A Little Life because it's exactly that. The book spans their respective life, starting from college onto their deaths.
Mm-hmm.
So around 60, early 70s, late 60s, and touches on their growth. It goes back and forth into their histories. The main thing that the whole book is about is Jude and his very, very distressing, horrific
life.
And this life he keeps from his friends. He literally doesn't talk about it because it's so distressing. He's been through so much, and I guess it's about him not getting better, because it doesn't get better, but him learning love and him being loved and him living with this trauma as a child and as a young adult and as an adult. And what that trauma looks like to himself, what it looks like to the close people around him, and what it looks like to the rest of the world, I guess. Yeah, that is essentially A Little Life. But it is, guys, it is
horrific
stress, to be very honest with you. And I think we will discuss about the different themes that come up.
Okay. So my first overall thoughts about this book.
What are your thoughts? Yeah, because you told me to read it.
I read it in June when the retrograde was happening and I was offline and I didn't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And everything was just like stressful.
Yeah.
And I wanted to really focus on my life.
Yeah.
But then I ended up focusing on somebody else's life in this damn book. Yeah. I'd say the book is a beautiful book, but it's beautifully horrific.
Beautiful, yeah, that's
and,
what I would say.
I would say that just on an overall basis, it did teach me how to love a lot deeper, mm-hmm. and to care, and in like it's like it really does tap into the way that you think about empathy, and because the way you bite into the characters, you slowly build this relationship with them all.
It's like friendship.
Friendship. Yeah. And, you know, because one of the core themes is friendship. Yeah. But you build this relationship with all four of the characters. You look at how your life, your early stages of your life kind of dictate your perspective to the rest of it. So we see the perspective. The last perspective we see is Jude's, but...
The last perspective
of... Obviously, because then we find out about his background and then how he kind of like comes to this point. But before that, we know about JB and his kind of like privileged kind of life. We know about Willem and about his loss
and his younger brother
and where he's come from. We learn about Malcolm and his super privileged life, but his how he questions a lot of things and he doesn't know. And people kind of like question his blackness, question his sexuality, question everything about himself. And then, so we've got those conversations that happen in there, and you build and you buy into them, mm-hmm. you love them, and then heartbreak happens, and then you're distraught on the tube trying to walk somewhere, and it's just like you're like oh my God, I can't not put this book down, and you have people giving you sympathetic looks in the train.
People like, approaching you to be like, how are you going? How are you doing?
I was on the Bakerloo line train once. And I was just there reading it, and this man was just looking at me from across the film. I'm like, what are you looking at me for? Yeah, you know when you're just trying to like focus on the books. So I was like, you know what? I'm actually reading a book, so I can just face my front, look up, and then now he's sitting in front of me. I'm like, nah, okay. You know when it comes to, you know, it's like them horror movies, and it's like they just made their way to
you. Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I just had to say, that book, it's a beautiful book. Mm-hmm. How far are you in it? And I'm like, oh, I'm on like page 300. He's like, okay. Enjoy that. when you get to like page 600.
Like, no, 400 and something.
Yeah. And he was just like, because it's the same thing that I was doing to Ray. Ray kept messaging me like every 100 pages.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, where are you at? And she's like, oh, 210 or something.
Yeah.
And I'd be like,
okay.
I'd be like, okay, so message me when you're at page 500.
Yeah. And then 700.
And we will we'll get there. Lo and behold, I got phone calls.
Crying voice notes
and just like
bawling.
Life is But the thing is, right, so and the book is so tender. The book like really, she writes really beautifully. Technically, she's a beautiful writer. There's some things where the way that she describes some things, I was like, wow, like I would not even, it's so clear. She writes so such clarity and such precision that when something horrific happens, it cuts you because it's like, because you just, there's no ambiguity here.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that you don't know about, specifically about their ages / their races or whatever.
Yeah.
Which you kind of do know about the races, but obviously when it comes to Jude and stuff, because there are certain things that are a bit hazy, like... She's a very clear and clarified writer.
It's so weird how it's like, it is in the beginning. So it really starts with these young men like going into college, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But then each and every single one of them, you get a little glimpse of their past. Mm-hmm. But with Jude, it's always in a haze. It's always like everyone is talking about Jude because he's so different. He has these fits on his legs. You never really, even till the end, you're still... dangled things like this happened in his past, so he can't talk to people about what happened in his past, and that translates into the reader because you also get that frustration that every other character feels by not really knowing him. And so when he slowly begins to share in his own unique way, it's almost a privilege to know, because you're like, oh, okay, and that's how you almost invest in him as well as a character. But yeah, as a thought, it's written like the way she can propel a story forward. It's very rare for me to get a writer who knows how to move a story along, who knows how to...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Like, literally make a story, but not just a story. This is a life. Like, she's actually written about a life, lives. Like, she's written and done so well to do that. It's not just beginning, middle, end, where it's like, oh, this is a story, this is the climax, this is the big thing that happens, and this is the end, and, you know, happily ever after, or no, not happily ever after. It's just you're born, shit happens, good things happen, bad, horrible things happen. You have to live with these things happening. Mm-hmm. You build and make relationships. You lose and make relationships. And then you die. And people live on you, like live ahead of you, and they remember you.
Yeah.
And some don't, and that's it.
Yeah.
But, oh.
Like, even, okay, so there's a bit, and he's really talking. Anyway, let's go into the characters then. But I want to talk about Jude last.
Do you? Yeah, okay.
I feel like there's more
to talk about.
So talk about Jude last. If we go through the characters, so, or the themes in general. So, okay, so they're four friends, and they're four male friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this kind of bond whereby they've like known each other since university. Yeah. And that basically, when you make a bond of university friends, it's like formative years before you reach adulthood,
yeah,
full adulthood. So they tend to be friends that you kind of carry for life.
Yeah.
In that sense. And it's like figuring out your 20s and then figuring out your 30s and then 40s, and then this is kind of, these are the decades and generations that we find ourselves through with the book.
Yeah, like 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s.
20s, 30s, 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
So if we go in backwards, I want to say Malcolm first,
mm-hmm,
because Malcolm obviously studied architecture, but they kind of like looked at Malcolm as the privileged member of the group who didn't really have much to offer other than the fact that he was just there and black. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, mixed race. Or was he Caribbean? He was Caribbean, wasn't he?
He was mixed race, because he would always like question, he's like, at the beginning you get like this whole, is he black? Is he not black?
Mm.
Well, sorry, he is black, but then people treat him like he's white because of his privileged parents. Mm.
I don't think he was mixed race, though. I think
he was mixed race, you know.
Oh, okay.
I think so. I'm not sure. I'll go back.
His dad was a judge.
Yeah, his dad was pretty prominent.
I can't remember whether his dad was a black judge, though, or a white judge.
But his dad really loved his friends, because, like, one of them, I think it was Willem, was the one that lived with him, or was it JB?
Jude.
Was it Jude that lived with him? Oh, yes, it was Jude. Because
Jude lived with him, and Jude was going into law.
Yeah, and then his dad was, who was like, he really loves Jude, blah, blah, blah. And I think because of the doubt that Malcolm had over his identity, it's almost like, I'm so privileged. Do I really have issues to talk about?
Yeah.
You know, when you're like, I'm privileged, therefore my problems aren't really problems. So when he like, he'd always be like, oh, I don't know if I should get married. Everybody else is getting married. Do you think I should get married, Jude? Yeah. Do you think I should get married? Yeah. Oh, should I do this job? Should I not do this job? Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of always in between. He didn't know what he wanted.
Yeah.
Sexuality-wise as well, racial-wise, career-wise. Remember, because he was like, he was an architect. And then he broke off to kind of start up this startup thing, and he didn't know whether to leave the job because his dad was like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All those kind of pressures. Like, he was literally in between everything. He didn't know what he wanted. But he had the privilege of choice.
Yes.
He could literally choose anything he wanted to in his life, because even if he didn't work for like a year, he would be fine.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
But his company did really well in there.
Yeah,
it was like international.
Did really well. And
he was making homes for his friends.
Yeah.
I think that's all. I love that shit.
Yeah. And he built all the homes for his friends and stuff. And then like just amazing, kind of like layouts just for the specific needs.
What I love about this book is that it really goes into detail about that architecture. So you feel Malcolm in things, because the homes that they live in, obviously they start off on, you know, what's it called, that little street that they lived in before, this tiny apartment that Jude and Willem lived in,
Lisbonard Street.
And what's so great about this, because it spans their life, you see the growth from them living in this tiny awful apartment in New York to them having different homes
because their careers grew.
And it's so fulfilling, because you're like reading this, we are in that stage of Lisbonard Street, I think. We're there. And when it's, I think it's great in that, you know, when your parents talk about back in the day, like we are in our back in the day.
Yeah,
now.
That's it. Yeah. I even had this conversation with my mom the other day, just like, oh, what was it like? Like, obviously she's not from London, when she came to London and stuff.
Yeah.
We had that conversation and she was just like, oh yeah, I came. And then I was in this room, and then like, see, it was kind of sublet, and then I kind of went here and it was just there. And I was like, oh my God, like, and they've lived a lot, like, and then like, when you look around, like, I'm in this house. And like, this is the house, this is the part, that kind of part of their life where they're here now. And then it just kind of like
living at home, where they should move out.
Yeah. And then when it comes to empty nesters and all these things and all that stuff. So it's a bit like, what? And
when they never expected
when you think about our kind of like position in life at the minute, it's really that, like Lisbonard Street there before we start moving in with our friends or living with our friends or kind of like
living by yourself, starting a new job. And then before you know it, they have estates, like homes, because, you know, Jude was a big fat time lawyer and Willem is like a crazy big actor. Mm-hmm. And they have the money to now just like design their own homes. Yeah. They have art from, they travel the world.
Yeah.
And I think that was beautiful. But so JB.
But also, and also in that stage that you've got, you're right, because they're all struggling at in their chosen careers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So obviously Jude is working in the, Jude being a lawyer, he's working in the.
He was at a bakery. Remember, he was at a bakery and then
while he was studying, but when he was at the, what's it called?
Prosecutor's office.
Yeah, prosecutor's office, but I forgot what
it was. That was like his first job.
The attorney general, like, the district attorney and stuff. He was working there. And
Willem was a waiter.
William was a waiter as an actor. I mean, JB was working as a receptionist in an art place, trying to like push his agenda. And then obviously Malcolm, being the privileged one, he was just literally still at home, but he was working as an architect.
Yeah.
But low pay, because architects get paid so low at the very beginning of their careers and stuff.
But it was so weird how you saw the potential in all of them. Like, he was always creating little models of things and giving it to his friends. And Willem was taking on like roles that he really didn't want to do, but he was like questioning it. Even me, I was like, oh, he's never gonna make it. Then you realize like he's massive later on. It's like, crazy. Like
working in the restaurant, and there was that thing, I think Hanya said in the piece, like in the book, she was just like, it's the place where, you know, you go to die with regards to your career. You know what I mean? Like, you could actually either stay there as an actor, as someone who's completely a potential actor working in these restaurants, or you can go and do something else.
Yeah.
And it was something like, and that was kind of those kind of questions that he was having, because he was like, I've been doing this for ages and I'm still at this place. And I think that, and that's very similar to kind of where we're at right now, like regards to me doing the journalism stuff. And I was like, I don't, I'm been here and I've been here for ages and I just don't feel like anything's progressing. Mm-hmm. I don't think that anything's happening. And it's just kind of like this really weird, wayward moment to the, you know what I mean? And everybody's like finding their feet in their careers and stuff. And it's so difficult. But then also, and then that's why when people start talking about just this generation, I'm just thinking it's no different to any other generation. It's no literally different. You're just in your 20s and that's just how it is. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And but that's Malcolm. And I do think that Malcolm...
You know, Malcolm had a big, has a big heart.
He has a big heart because he let everybody in. Because he's like, in.
But also at the end, obviously, there's going to be mad spoilers in this. So,
yeah.
Just sorry. There's going to be spoilers. But,
I don't want to spoil it too much because I feel like I don't want to rob people's experience of having the first of reading it for the first time. Do you see what I mean? But at the end,
basically,
at the end, it's very traumatic. The book is traumatic.
Yeah,
the book is traumatic.
So like, we're not going to mention that. It's more so like he
every page there's trauma.
Jude obviously is like disabled, right?
Oh, yeah.
He becomes slowly more and more disabled as he grows older, based off of things that happened to him, and. There was a moment where at the end when they're talking about Malcolm, Jude is talking to, they're around a table and they're talking about Malcolm and the good things that he's done and what, like, his, their favourite memories of Malcolm. And Jude says, I overheard a conversation, something around overhearing a conversation between Malcolm and Willem, who is Jude's best friend out of the four. And Malcolm was making a bookshelf for them in L'Esplanade Street and he got the measurements wrong and it was like awkward and it was not fitted properly and everyone was like, Malcolm, it's fine, like whatever, but he was so adamant on getting it right. And Malcolm was talking to Willem and then he goes, imagine what would happen if it falls, and it falls on Jude or something like that. And for Jude, it was like Malcolm is always someone who's always thinking about other people and their comfort. So for him, like designing a home for them, even when he designed Jude's big home, it was all
his flat, his apartment.
Yeah, it was all to make sure that he's comfortable, based off of himself, like not just what he likes, but like he's disabled. Are these things wheelchair friendly? Is it wide enough? You know, where are the handles? If he falls, how can he get back up? And I think that was so amazing about Malcolm. Like, and we never really, I always feel like it was an injustice to not know that much about him.
Yeah. I think there should be spin-offs.
Yeah, because this was so Jude heavy. But yeah,
that was Malcolm. JB, so Jean-Baptiste,
so, I love him.
So JB is Haitian descent, gay. He is an artist. He comes from a family, a very maternal family. So his, I think his dad died when he was younger, and he lives with his mom, his grandma, his auntie. He literally lives in. He's from New York. Like he goes home every other weekend to wash and to get washing.
Get his laundry done.
Get food and stuff and all that. And all of that jazz. And so that's why in my head I'd say he's the most privileged out of all of them, in that he had the he had the love and the family to do whatever he wanted.
Yes.
They were always there. They were supporting him, even as awful and as terrific he is. Like, I felt like he was a very awful character.
What?
I feel like he was very sharp. He was very like, there were days he would just lash out on someone.
Yeah.
And then obviously, oh, it's JB. Yeah. And
he was the life of the party.
I think over the years, that people got tired of that. Yes. And then there was a friction at some point when they weren't talking to him.
Yes.
And all that stuff. But JB, for me, JB as a character, I think like he is not somebody that I would have as a friend, but he was also somebody that I like felt really compassionate towards, in that I do feel like he was really lonely.
Definitely.
Even considering in the group of friends that he had, but it's one of those things like when you're, I think in the early stages when they all needed each other, he fit. As they grew older and they began to not need each other as much, and obviously friendships started to like form in other places, and obviously Malcolm was then focusing on his career and growing his business and his girlfriends, and then obviously JB was like where do I fit in this? Yeah. They're my friends, but are they my friends, mm-hmm. sort of thing. But then also I think he went through a phase of, oh, I want to meet other people and kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, socialize and network with all these other people. They'll always be my friends, but I'm networking with yeah. these guys. And then it just, the point comes to you where you're like, these are my core friends. Like, these are my core friends. And we're all over the place. Like, what's happening? And I think the only way, and the way that he kind of reacted to that was negatively. Mm-hmm. He didn't try and like pull people back in and be like, oh, how are you feeling here? How are you feeling there? He went through a phase of like crystal meth addiction. He was around the real artsy types.
Was it this guy, Jackson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think all these artsy types of people, you know, high all the time. That's why when I say terrific, I mean in a literal sense. Like, he was just like, it was terrifying probably just to be around him sometimes, because you don't know what JB you're going to get. And they had to hold an intervention for him. And that's when I realized, oh, their friendship runs deep. Like, mm-hmm. they let him live the life that he wanted to live, and they accepted him for the life that he wanted to live with regards to his artwork and the people that he was around. But they were there just observing and watching to make sure that he didn't drown.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with JB. Like, they always, as much as he felt lonely or X, Y, and Z, they were always there to save him. Always. Like, they were always there to save JB.
But he didn't regardless. See that.
That's what I'm saying. He didn't see that because he when you're so blind. He saw everyone
was saving Jude, which I think as well.
And then again, that's, what is that then? That's, yeah. Isn't that like arrogance or narcissism?
I think it's loneliness. So my idea of JB is obviously he's like the loud, bashful, awfully talented. So this book, I think, is very much, there are things that anchor it. And I think JB's artwork is one thing that anchors mm-hmm. this book, because his collection, you are told about his collection, and they go to his museums and they have big fights over his artwork, because his collection is very much about his friends. So he mm-hmm. takes pictures and paintings and drawings or whatever, and he paints his friends, especially Jude and Willem and all of them. And it's very like self-reflective, because he's so awfully talented, and he's able to capture their lives really, really well. JB, there was a point where I was like, he was the one that took the longest to succeed and be successful in his career.
Based on the career that he chose.
Yeah, so he's an artist, yeah. So he was a
visual artist.
Yeah. But he was the one that knew, there was a point when Jude was like, when the success did come to him, it almost calmed him down, because he always knew he was going to get it. He very much believed in himself, whereas everybody else was like, I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing. And so when he got that success, it was like, ah. So he had, I guess, an arrogance to him, definitely. But I think JB loved a lot, but I don't think he knew how to... He didn't think that compassion was a way of loving. Like, he couldn't be a Willem, because he was like, I think he was more like, oh, come on, like, get it together kind of person. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got it together. Why don't you have it together? And that's why I think he struggled a lot to be close to people. And he was trying to emulate that the college life at every other stages of his life, throwing these parties and bringing people together from school. And everyone's like, of course he'll still be talking to them. Do you know what I mean? Because he tried to recreate that closeness everywhere. And he didn't understand about pulling people away. He didn't understand when people pull away or make new friends and establish new relationships. And he, I think, was really, really jealous of the relationship that Jude and Willem had, because he wanted to be close. He wanted somebody to be that close with him, and he could never get it. Even though he made out with Willem in high school once, and he was like, oh, I'm not feeling it, sorry.
High school or college?
College, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, university. But he still, I think, really wanted it. And I think he loved Jude. Mm. Like, a part of me is like, because remember later on he kissed him. He's like, oh, you look so sad. And he took advantage of Jude so many times. And he was, I think he wanted attention. Mm. I think he was angry. But I genuinely feel so sorry for him. Mm. Because I was like... You need love. Mm. Like, you actually need
to
love.
You need to understand what that is. He doesn't know. I don't think he understood what it was. Like, they all created beauty. They all created beautiful things. But they just didn't really get it. Like, they didn't get it in the time, in the moment. And it's not until you look back on these things retrospectively that you think, oh my God, like, they actually created these amazing stuff.
And even though he was a horrible person, I loved him. Like, and no, that's so weird, because, like, you have to allow people to not even horrible. He was just different. Yeah. He showed his affection differently.
I don't think that it would have worked without JB in the book. Do you see what I mean? Like, I feel like it all plaid their place. And you either love a character the most or you don't, but you like the collective. Do you know what I mean?
You love the collective. You know what I mean?
So you love the collective. It's just that within that collective, you're like, well, I kind of lean more towards.
It's like friendships. Like, you know, your WhatsApp groups are your favorites. It's like, I love these people, but this is my person. Like, we'll talk outside the group chat. We'll be like, oh, like, do you know what I mean?
Or even if you're friends outside the group chat, but like, you obviously, everybody has their particular friendship. And it just becomes that. So there's that. So, I mean, JB, I like JB. And because him and Malcolm were actually just Caribbean, it actually just killed me.
Yeah, I loved them too.
Yeah, they were just Caribbean people. Like, they were
literally, they were really lovely people.
And I found that really interesting that she didn't choose any African American. Like, they didn't have any African American connection with anybody. It was like, they are Caribbean American and white American and ambiguous American.
No, there was these two characters. It's like the Asian something young and the black something young. I forgot their names.
But
there's so many people in this damn book. It's like 700 pages.
There's so many people, but you follow, but you keep up.
It's not like you
forget everybody, but you keep up. So there's that.
Willem. Oh man.
Willem had a life. So I can't even had a life. Like, he was just so he's the actor, and obviously, as you say, he grew through that restaurant phase, and he came from like a farm.
He came from a ranch
that he didn't own. He made it very clear that his parents
didn't own it. They were employed
to work on the ranch.
But his parents, what I love about him is his parents didn't really show, because his parents had so many kids that died young that they weren't able to offer love to him or his young disabled brother who died. And he loved that boy so much, but he was so angry that his parents they were like, we just need you guys to survive because we've had so much death that we can't expend this love for it to just go. And I felt so sorry for his parents, but equally, I get it why he was so angry at them. So he left. He was like, nah, bun this. Going to college. He's like, I can't do this. And then
I think his brother died when he was
in college.
And it was just like, well, I have no connection with these people.
My family now, they're just I love them as family, but that's it. And he moved in, he got into college, and he was roommates with Jude. So that's how they first met. Willem is
a beautiful man, like
a beautiful, loving human being. There was one time I was angry with him, but I got it why. But he is so sensitive to not just himself, but to other people. He understands emotion, or he's so like emotionally aware. He knows, or maybe sometimes he doesn't know, but he's just in him to act accordingly. Do you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't know. He's not like, oh, I know how to handle people, blah blah. He's just, I would explain, he's like a nerve that is myelinated. He's not like a raw nerve that just gets, he's a nerve, he's functioning, but he's also a protected nerve, so he's not moving mad.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's got the myelin around his sheath. He's got it.
Okay.
I love that man so
biology
much. I know, like, I love...
Willem made me the most sad out of everybody in this book, just because there was so much riding on his shoulders, but he took everything in his stride.
He took everything.
Like, I just don't understand how you can do that. Like, and he had a fulfilled career.
He had
several loves. He
dated women. And then he fell in love.
Yeah. Don't spoil that.
Don't we?
No, not yet. I don't know.
You're right.
We'll talk about themes a bit later, I guess.
Then
it's just like,
he was like, you have yin and yang. He was the violin to Jude's bow. Because Willem was full.
Mm.
And Jude was empty.
Mm.
And Willem kept on pouring into Jude, but he was always replenished.
Mm.
He was not devaluing himself in pouring into other people. And I think Willem taught me love in this book.
Mm.
Like, okay. Unconditional love.
Yeah.
In this book.
Also, when you think about it, I've got friends who are actors, and I think that Hanya kind of like got this really right. Actors, they have to, I mean, I was talking to my friend who was training at RADA, and we had a conversation about it, and she was just like, you, as an actor, there are lessons that they have to learn, and they have to, there's something where they have to, just as a, on a spiritual kind of like their own, as part of the profession as well, they have to shed their own personalities, like literally shed everything they believe about themselves. Everything's gone in order to
put somebody else,
create another character.
Yeah.
And I feel like you have to be deeply empathetic as an actor, as a writer, as somebody who's creating characters and stories,
these types.
And I think that Willem got it. They got Willem so right because he had to be that person to be able to be empathetic to those kind of emotions. Because obviously you absorb so much that you then can create and portray. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really important for that character there, because none of them else were writers in that sense. Like, so Malcolm built things to accommodate his friends. You got
JB
shocked, and like he had a very frightening kind of like, no, like he was just
in a way he what's it when you like memories, like the pictures that
he created. Yeah.
He's the one that made the story for four men.
He kept the thread going. Yeah. Like this is the story.
Yeah. So he was writing. So he was like painting and drawing everybody at each stage of their lives.
Yeah. Willem is like, you know, I feel like he's the emotional crutch of the group.
Yeah.
Because he can be.
Apparently he was beautiful.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, all the girls were onto him, but he just couldn't even like see it. He was the emotional, like, you'd go to Willem. But then he had boundaries. So when JB did something awful, Willem stopped talking to him.
Yeah.
Even though the awful thing was JB doing it to Jude. But he almost, like, Willem felt like, no, actually, you almost did this to me as well. Like, you don't do this. It's wrong.
Mm.
He was their emotional crutch, but I think he was also their ethical compass, really.
Mm.
He was the ethical compass. He was the conscious of that group.
Mm. Mm. When they grow, like, and that's it. And then Jude is just the core, I guess.
Jude's the plot of the story.
He's just the plot. He's just the one that kind of helps the symphony continue, I guess. Because without them, without Jude, who's to say that any of them would even be friends? Do you see what I mean? Hi, guys. And that is the end of part one of this episode of Mostly Lit. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe on all the channels where you can find podcasts. You can throw us any suggestions that you want at Mostly Lit on Twitter, Mostly Lit Pod on Instagram, or just drop us an email, mostlylit@gmail.com. Thanks for all your love and support. We'll see you next week.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.